Well, there they are, the Tom Tom Club, and the wordy Rapping Hood is the name of the song and also the name of this little wireless program here on Audible PFM every Friday lunchtime. Tracy Hutchison here with you. Great to have your company and terrific as always to be broadcasting from the mighty Radio Port Phillip on the gorgeous Mornington Peninsula. And I'm thrilled, as we always do at this time on a Friday, to welcome to the mic someone who is making a fantastic contribution to our life, our quality of life, our intellectual quota, our kind of creative zest, someone who is a voice familiar to RPP listeners in profile this lunchtime, and I speak of the one and only host of RPP's Taking Care of Business show, Jackie Mitchell, in conversation in the wordy Rapping Hood. G'day, Jack.
Hi, Tracy, back to back, Jackie Mitchell. Oh, a bit scary for those listening.
No, too much Jackie Mitchell is never enough, I say.
I can have you introduce me anytime, by the way. It's very, very generous, very, very nice.
Well, brand power. Powerhouse, yeah. Strategist, specialist, a broadcaster, obviously, management consultant, MC, keynote speaker, you've got a spot on Sky News, got your own show there talking about brand and strategy and for small business. What I'm really interested on this program is sort of unpacking how Jackie Mitchell that we know today gets to be the Jackie Mitchell that we know and hear today. So I'm kind of going to get you to sort of, you know, delve back a little bit into your family tree and your growing up and who perhaps were those people in your life and circumstances in your life that started lighting that fuse for you about the sorts of things that interest you. So just tell us initially the growing up years and that those formative years when the young Jackie Mitchell is finding her way in the world.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a reflective time coming on today. It makes you stop and reflect. They always say when people are entering a business awards and you've got to enter the business awards and you've got to go back and think about your business, how it is a very reflective process. And I suppose it got me thinking, well, how did I get to where I am today? Part of it is my thirst for knowledge. Absolutely. Learning. I love people. I love learning from people. Mm. And you never stop learning from people. And I also like variety. So I always believe you need to zig and zag as being the key to success. If you just, you know, always love numbers and you go to university and you do accounting and your parents were accountants and you go straight vertical to the, you know, finance director, it's always limiting. So you need to go off and do something completely different to then come back to that. You can always come back to it. But I suppose my childhood was not normal. My father played football for Essendon. He was an Essendon champion, Hall of Fame champion, proud to say. Mm. But as a kid, I didn't sort of get that. I used to, my brother and I'd be wheeled out to the, you know, photographer of the Herald Sun or TV cameras or Dad presented Lyndon Johnson with a football when the US president at the time came and I think it was part of Moomba and I sat on Dad's knee. So I sort of thought, I didn't think, you know, just growing up you don't think that's anything sort of different. But, you know, having footballers around the house. So when Dad finished playing, he went into coaching. And we'd always have footballers around for barbecues because they were young and Mum was a great cook and we had very, very social upbringing. We always had a lot of people around the house and we'd had I grew up in East Burwood where we first lived and then moved to Donvale. So we're on a couple of acres in Donvale and so there was enough room there for this cricket pitch and my dad was not only a great footballer, he played district cricket as well, just a great all-round sportsman. And so we'd play backyard cricket and on a turf pitch and against the likes of Jimmy Buckley from Carlton and Sam Newman from Geelong and Len Thompson from Collingwood and they'd all be there and I'd be the only girl. But I didn't think that was weird. I didn't think it was a big deal and I was mad into my tennis. So I just hit the cricket ball like a tennis ball. And if it went under the house next door, it was four runs. And if it went over the trees, it was six. And so I just got out there and, swung the bat around. And so they started, of course, being the girl, bowling it softly to me. And they'd just be, swinging it and hitting fours and sixes. And then they started getting a bit more serious. But I think in response to your earlier question, that was the foundation for me, that I didn't really understand the difference between gender. It was about the best person for the job. So don't, if you want to bowl to me slowly, fine, go for it. That's your problem, not mine. So I think that led, that was a good grounding from that perspective. My mum had always worked as well. So she'd worked for as long as I could remember. So having a career for a female was normal to me. Our family were very big on education. So doing year 12, going to university, there was no other choice as far as I was concerned. Mm. And mum's best friend was one of Australia's top fashion designers. And those that have got married, Adele for Brides in Toorak Road, Adele Chapeau. And she was a very famous bridal fashion designer and milliner. So I grew up, you know, doing some modelling for her, modelling hats and things. And so I had this very nice sort of balance between this very masculine upbringing with the sports side of it and then also this very feminine side as well. So I think that's been a really good balanced grounding for what I do today, I think.
Those formative years, you talked about sport being absolutely part of the fabric of your life and being around high-performing people and thinking that that's actually sort of quite a normal thing. Yeah. So you're talking about sort of elite-level performers, athletes, and talking about, you know, elite business women who are running their own fashion labels and an era too where it sort of felt like you could actually just sort of step in the world and into the world and do whatever you wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. That thought in my mind is I could do anything I wanted to do, absolutely anything. There was no restrictions on what I wanted to do with my life. As you get older, of course, that's not always the reality. So there was a little bit of a disconnect there. But certainly from an optimistic point of view, that anything is possible.
Jackie Mitchell is our guest on Audible PFM. If the voice sounds familiar, yes, Jackie is the host of Taking Care of Business on air between 11 and 12 every Friday here on Audible PFM and in conversation on the Wordy Wrapping Hood this Friday, where we unpack and put back together the life and times of people who are enjoying life on the peninsula and making a huge contribution to our life and times on the peninsula. Jack, I'm going to pause for a minute and go to a track that will kind of give us a little bit of room to move in terms of the conversation, because you've picked some really great songs for our conversation today. So the track we're going to hear is by Rick Springfield, and this is a track called Jessie's Girl.
Woo-hoo!
You love this track.
I love it. It's my all-time favourite song.
Why is it your all-time favourite song?
Oh, because it reminds me of watching Countdown in the 70s as a teenager, and Rick Springfield came on singing with this film clip. Oh, he was just a dream to die for. And I just love the song. I like the way that it's written. I like the word, there's not many songs with the word mute in it.
So many words.
The word mute.
Mute?
Yeah, in it.
Right, I'll listen out for it.
Mute. Yeah, you listen to it. Yeah, there's not many songs with that word in it. And look, I just think, and he was Australian, so I like that as well.
Let's have a listen on Audible PFM. This is Rick Springfield. The absolutely fabulous Rick Springfield and Jessie's Girl. And it is the choice of our guest on the Wordy Wrapping Hood on this Friday. Jackie Mitchell is her name. She is the host of Taking Care of Business. She is the brand powerhouse, a strategist, the specialist, broadcaster, consultant, keynote speaker, Sky News,
schizophrenic
Sky News presenter, and of course, but her heart is here on the peninsula and very much part of the powerhouse of the RPP family. In conversation on the Wordy Wrapping Hood this Friday, and we're taking a walk through Jackie's life in conversation. Jackie, you talked about your dad Hugh being an Essendon Hall of Famer. You talked about being around elite level footballers growing up. You talked about friends of your mum's who were kind of successful businesswomen running fashion labels. And so it's no great surprise that probably the first place you landed that really started shaping you in terms of formative years was actually at one of the world's biggest international sporting events, the Australian Open, in a very senior role in communications there. So
that sort of tennis basically was tennis,
wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I played tennis. My brother played cricket. We had to sort of pick a sport. I think we didn't have a choice really, but it was just so natural to do it. And again, by absolute chance, Mum and Dad were saying, well, you know, where do we take Jackie to get coaching? And it's all about who you know, not what you know. And Dad knew this man called Ian Barclay, who played for St Kilda. I think he played the seconds. I'm not sure. I might have played a couple in the first. But in those days, in the 70s and early 80s, all footballers knew each other. They didn't just stick within their club. They all, you know, cross-fertilised. And Dad's now 82 and still good friends with the likes of Alan Morrow and Alistair Lord from Geelong and all those champions. Anyway, so Dad knew Ian Barclay and he was coaching at a club called Heatherdale, which is near Ringwood, and we were living in Donvale. Still a 20-minute drive, but they drove me there, and I just happened to be in the same group that Pat Cash was learning to play tennis, and all these other wonderful champions, Mark Hartnett and Bernadette Randall, and out of this group, most turned pro, and if they didn't turn pro, they became tennis coaches, and are still in the group. I still catch up with them. I catch up with them in the Australian Open every year. We have a barbecue and we have a bit of fun there. And it was just an amazing time.
And it was through that time at working at the Australian Open, you yourself became a tennis coach, but you were working, it was the first taste really of corporate life and running a big event. And through that, it was your introduction into the corporate world. So we're talking about engagements with sort of major organisations, major sponsors. So McDonald's, Pepsi, Nabisco, Hyundai, Ansett, some of the big companies that you would be able to both observe and then get excited about what it was that they were doing with their brand. Can you remember a time when you really sort of thought, oh yeah, I really understand what's going on here, how companies and corporations use their image as a way of kind of like getting their message through to consumers?
Yeah, absolutely crystal clear. So I started my first degree, which was social science degree, and most people were working part-time jobs in bars and things, and I had an opportunity to coach tennis, so that was $40 an hour cash in hand, which was a lot of money when you're at uni. Mm. And then I got the job working at the Australian Open and working with my first job straight from uni with McDonald's and Pepsi, as you mentioned. I remember thinking very clearly how professional they were, just so professional, and learning about, from a marketing perspective, why they were there. Like, I couldn't understand, what is Nabisco, which is an American brand, doing in Australia? And it was working on the Legends of Davis Cup, was the first event I worked on as part of the bicentenary back in 1988 when the Tennis Centre, now Rod Laver Arena, just opened. And working with them and understanding what was driving them, and then having to work with their agencies. So then I was introduced to the concept, oh, they've got agencies. They've got an ad agency and a PR agency and all these people involved in this corporation, and how does that all work? So that was, a wonderful entree into the world. And I was really lucky at that. Look, I just went along with it. I would say yes to anything. And I remember one time my boss said, can you go to the airport and pick up John Newcombe? I said, yep, I can do that. Of course, I wouldn't just say yes to everything. Just say yes to everything. And I didn't want to ask any too many questions because I didn't want to be perceived as I wasn't enthusiastic or I was hard work. So I got into my car, went to the airport and picked up John Newcombe.
What kind of car did you have?
Well, this is a hilarious story. It was a 1978 two-door Toyota Corolla.
Perfect.
And I remember thinking to myself, I wish I'd known that because I would have actually emptied out the back seat or the boot. I don't know how I'm going to fiddle his stuff in anyway. So I just parked the car and I met him at the baggage carousel. Of course, everyone knows what John Newcombe looks like. So I went up and said hello and said, I'm here to drive you to the airport. And off the carousel, one bag, two, suitcase, three, four, a set of golf clubs, all his tennis rackets. And I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to... Anyway, we get the trolley. I make him walk across the other side. This is a guy that would be used to the limo.
Yeah.
So now he goes over and he's sitting in the front. There's a two-door...
78 Corolla.
78 Corolla with just crap everywhere. And he's got two suitcases on his lap.
Brilliant.
It's a manual car, so every time I had to change gears, I had to get him to move his leg. And he did not say anything once about anything bad. I had to drive him to the Hyatt where he was staying and drop him off. And they see him sort of, you know, come out of this car after being all sort of hunched up. And I get back to my boss. He said, "Did you pick up John Newcombe?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Where are the keys?" And I said, "What keys?" He goes, "The keys to the car." And I think to myself, what does he want my car keys for? So I gave him my car keys and he goes, "No, the Ford, because I was sponsored by Ford. Why didn't you take..." Well, no one told me. I didn't know I was allowed to do that. So that's a funny story. But it also shows how naive and how much I've learned from then.
But also it's given you an insight into working with people at that level. Yeah. People are people.
They are,
and if you treat people well, and they'll. I mean, I think that's the kind of the adage around, successful, help people.
Mm. Well, John Newcombe had a daughter a similar age to me, and so he was asking me about uni and just talking about general stuff as we're putting along the Tullamarine Freeway. It's probably 60 k's an hour, or cars are flying past us. It's all one of those funny sort of situations. If anyone looked out the window and thought, "That looks like John Newcombe," no, it wouldn't be in that car.
In that car.
With all those bags on his lap.
And who's that driving?
Yeah, that's it.
And exactly. What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on there? So, that's right. People are people no matter what. But the only time I've ever really been starstruck was when I met Rick Springfield. Well, I paid to meet him. So it was at the Countdown Spectacular. And you could go and buy a guitar. It was $600 or $700. Buy a guitar signed by him and get to meet him.
Wow. You had $600 then.
Well, yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah. I would have taken out a loan to do that. It was the best money I ever spent, though.
I bet.
It was great.
Jackie Mitchell is with us. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show. I almost said we are taking care of business. We're taking care of business with Jackie Mitchell on the Wordy Rapping Hood. The host of that show, of course, in conversation here on this program, Tracy Hutchison here with you. We're going to take another track from Jackie's musical selection for today, and it's a song that I understand you play. It's your rev up song when you go out before you do a kind of a big kind of speech or a kind of a, you know, some sort of big thing. Why is this one kind of get you revved?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a very masculine song,
but
it really gets my head in the right space. I played it when I had my first sort of big girl job, and I had to go into a boardroom and present my plan to ask for $10 million budget.
Hmm.
So it was a couple of hours and you get grilled and why do you want to spend money there? And, you know, because you're sort of competing for this pool of money. And I knew I was going to be absolutely flogged in there. And I had this on in the car and I remember it just got me in a really good place in my head. I was ready to go. I was ready to rock and roll. So this is it.
Well, let's have a listen to Offspring, Pretty Fly for a White Guy on Audible PFM. That is The Offspring and Pretty Fly for a White Guy, the selection of Jackie Mitchell here on the Wordy Rapping Hood on Audible PFM. Yes, Jackie Mitchell from Taking Care of Business is in conversation on the Wordy Rapping Hood this Friday. It's just on 12:30. Jackie Mitchell, the managing partner of Brandstorm, so she's a brand specialist and powerhouse around all things to do with the psychology of business. We know it from her own show here on Audible PFM. Keynote speaker, management consultant. You can see her on pop up on Sky News. She's also just joined the board here at Audible PFM. So got a bit on the plate. Jackie, you talked going into that track from The Offspring that it's the track that you play to rev you up, to get you really focused. And you played it just before you went into one of your big sort of first meetings where there was a $10 million contract on the table. Did you get it?
Yeah, I did.
And what happened in that meeting?
Oh, it was interesting. It was one of those defining moments. That's why I chose that song when I was thinking about it, because there's so many songs you could choose. But that was a defining moment whereby, you know, I went through the rigour, and which I think everyone should, just to justify why I wanted to spend X amount on this and marketing. And we talked earlier about branding, how it's so misunderstood. And I've got a room full of accountants, a room full of lawyers, a room full of scientists, a room full of asset managers, all male and very left brain, and so wanting to know how it was going to be measured and all that sort of stuff. So, look, it's all about preparation is key. So I'd done my homework. I was prepared. I was answering every question and sometimes the same question 8 times. And I think we were coming up to the fourth hour, which is a long time, yep. And at the end, the MD, I thought, was starting to get a little unfair with me. And I turned around and said to him, "I'm actually on your team. I'm doing this to help grow the business that you're in charge of, so I'm actually on your team." So that was the first bit, and then it got, I was starting to get a bit, I don't know, I just felt frustrated that I was answering the same questions, and this one guy asked me the same question again, and it was starting to get a bit offensive of my skill level and my integrity. So I turned around, and he was in assets, and it was in the utility, so he used to be responsible for the engineering side of things. And I turned around, and I remember this is so clearly, I can't remember his name, but I said to him, I don't advise you or tell you how to lay pipes, so don't tell me how to write a marketing plan.
And how, and did you get the job straight away?
Yeah, well, I did. But it actually, it just sort of shifted things a bit. It was more about respect the skill. You know, I'd spend so many years at university. I'm qualified, I'm trained, I'm experienced in this field. But it was one of those that marketing's this sort of fluffy, not taken seriously in the boardroom. And this was back in 1988, and it's still the case now. That it's not, it hasn't got as, it shouldn't have as much, it should have so much more credence in the boardroom than it does now, particularly brand. Mm. Anyway, I have different views about that. I think there's been a lot of people who claim to do marketing who don't do it so well, but it's another conversation.
Jackie Mitchell is our guest on The Wordy Wrapping Hood. We're in conversation with the host of Taking Care of Business on RPPFM and winding our way through the life and time and some of the motivations, some of the experiences of Jackie finding a way and the things that actually sort of contributed that. Jackie, you talked about that example, one of your very first examples of experiencing that sort of boardroom, that very male boardroom environment, which sadly we still see disproportionately in Australia, the underrepresentation of women at that level. But I'm interested in that process for you about how you got involved in the psychology of both business strategy, but the psychology of success, because I hear you talk about it a lot on your program, and I'm wondering what that evolution was about and what was the thinking behind it. Was it about the way men and women relate to each other and that there is a very different, it's changing and changed, but what were the key things for you that thought, hang on, it's actually about the way we relate to each other and how we kind of try and get the best out of each other? Because you talk a lot about this in successful business strategy.
Mm. Yeah, I do. I'll go back to the backyard cricket when I was the only girl playing backyard cricket and being competitive. I was better at batting than bowling because of my tennis, but certainly competitive. And when I got into the boardroom, when I got to that part of my career, and I remember a couple of times a couple of guys would say to me, oh, are you feeling okay? You're the only woman in the room. And I'd say, oh, am I? I hadn't noticed. I didn't feel uncomfortable. And then I realised they were uncomfortable. It wasn't me that was uncomfortable, which I wasn't, because I grew up in, as I said, a masculine part of my household. It was, you know, it was all about the best person for the job, regardless of your background, being gender, race, whatever it is. It was about the best brain for the job. And that's when I got my interest in the brain and psychology. But my first degree I did, because I didn't know what I wanted to do, was a Bachelor of Arts. I always do that when you're not quite sure. And it was in social science. And I did sociology and philosophy and psychology. And psychology, I just got straight A's and I've gone, oh, my God, this is good. Okay, I wasn't doing so well on the others, but I thought, okay, maybe this is my thing. And then as part of the process, you sit with a psychologist just to look at whether you've got a career in that, because they have to pick that you're, you know, a bit normal. Well, I wasn't normal enough. My empathy was too high. So they take you through these tests. So with my empathy and my sensitivity being so high, it would be I'd have a very high risk that when I'm dealing with clients, I would take their problems home with me as well. And then that then increased my risk of mental health issues. So I was advised that I was probably not suited to be a psychologist, which, look, at the time I was a bit like, what do they know? Mm. But in hindsight, it was probably a good thing. I think that's right. But I think that sensitivity and empathy has always sparked my interest in the area. And I think that's why I enjoy being a consultant. So I enjoy dealing with people. I enjoy the radio, speaking with people, being curious about what makes them tick, curious as to how they got to where they are now. So when I got my job in tennis, and I always went into marketing and media side of tennis, and then thought, you know, I looked around and there's all these ex-tennis players or ex-sports people, and I go, do I want to just spend my life in sports marketing? No, there's more than this. So I went back to uni, so when I was living in Perth, and did a business degree in marketing. So then I combined the two. It just sort of seemed a natural fit to combine the psychology with the business, which is brand, you know, because it's all about the heart and minds. And so combining those two. So then it's led me to an interest in what neuromarketing. Now, everything's neuro. It's the new buzzword. Neuroscience, but there's parts of neuroscience that is now really, I suppose, connected to consumer behaviour. So understanding what makes us as consumers tick. And they're now measuring emotions. They've never been able to do that before. And that's the key. And that's the bit I find quite fascinating. So I'm always interested in that side.
Jackie Mitchell is with us, RPPFM. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show. She is the host of Taking Care of Business on RPPFM. She's the managing partner of Brand Storm. So it's a specialist brand consultancy. She's a business growth mentor. She's a personal branding expert, of course. She does some media here. She turns up on Sky News, MC, keynote speaker. In her spare time, working on a book, a new board member here as well. And it's interesting, Jackie, because you talked about, we're going to play one more song of yours in a minute, and we're going to wrap a little bit earlier than we normally would, because we're going to be joined by Slava Gregorian, who's with his brother Leonard, yeah, doing a show at the Frankston Arts Centre in a couple of weeks' time. So we're going to wrap a little bit earlier on our conversation. But I was interested that you talked about the idea of brand and marketing not actually being in the boardroom, and that surprises me. Because of the world I spend so much time in, which is media, music and popular culture in particular, where brand is everything. And you've chosen someone, one of the current crop, along with Beyonce and Madonna and others, that have made brand absolutely everything. Kanye West. You've chosen Lady Gaga, Born This Way, as an example of a brand champion. What do you see in what she does, and how does that, I guess, articulate the way she uses her brand in her career?
Well, I think she's been very deliberate with how she's going to stand out. How is she going to differentiate herself in an industry that she's in with artists? There's so many. How do you make yourself different? So she's been very clear about that, but she's also leveraged that in a positive way. So Born This Way, from the song, she created a foundation, which is supporting youth, and, you know, encouraging them to be brave and to be themselves. She's been an advocate for so many causes, and she's even branded her fans. They're called Little Monsters. So she's even got a name for her fan base, you know, so she's been very clear about that. But whenever you think about Lady Gaga, and she was on the Super Bowl recently, and she jumped off, I don't know if you saw it, where she actually, at the beginning of her song, she leapt off from, she obviously was attached, but leapt onto the stage from the top of the arena. You could always going to be surprised with her. And the fact that expectation's already there and she continues to exceed that, I think she's awesome. But also she's crossed generations. My parents, who are in their 70s and 80s, love her. She did the thing with Tony Bennett. Do you remember?
Yes.
Okay, so she's gone into a different part of her brand. So, but it's still been consistent with the Lady Gaga. She's got a lot of elements with her brand, but she has not been inconsistent with it, and that's what I like.
Jackie Mitchell, always extremely consistent. I marvel at your show every week. It's the highlight of my radio week here on RPPFM. The host of Taking Care of Business, and in conversation on this Friday on the Wordy Rapping Hood, we're going to have a listen to the Lady Gaga song of your choice, the brand power champion. This is Born This Way on RPPFM. Jack, great to have a conversation. Thanks so much. Lady Gaga and Born This Way on RPPFM, the selection from our guest in conversation on this Friday, Jackie Mitchell. Stay with us on RPPFM. Very excited that in a moment we'll be joined by Slava Gregorian with his brother Leonard, who'll be at the Frankston Arts Centre in a couple of weeks' time. From Slava and Leonard Gregorian, the track is called Distance from the brand new record, the sixth duo release of these exquisite playing brothers who are performing in a couple of weeks' time here on the Mornington Peninsula at the Frankston Arts Centre. And I'm really thrilled to welcome to the microphone here at Audible PFM Slava Gregorian, one half of the Gregorian brothers. Slava, great to talk to you again and excited to learn that you'll be coming to the Peninsula shortly. Welcome to Audible PFM.
Good afternoon.
That you've been working with your brother off and on. You have sort of individual careers and then you come and go. I think, for, you know, we're probably going to both date each other now, but I think we're going back sort of 20 or 30 years that those recordings have actually been made between the two of you. This is obviously something that started happening when you were wee boys at home. Just how long have you been playing together?
Well, long, not quite that long. Len, I think, is only 32. Yes, yes. Sorry, I just have to do some maths in my...
It feels like you've been in my life a long time.
No, look, well, when we first started touring when he was about 15, 16 years old.
Mm.
And so, you know, it's been a good 15 years of professional work for our duo. And, you know, to be honest, that's 90% of our work. That's what we, you know, that's definitely our main project. I mean, we do veer off and do the odd thing with someone else or on our own, but the duo is definitely our biggest priority.
You talk about that being the biggest priority, working with your brother. I'm sure it has some huge rewards and some challenges. Watching the two of you play, there is an incredible synergy between the two of you musically. But do you always get along that well as you do musically?
Sadly, we have a very, very boring story to tell. We're the best of friends.
Yes.
And we really don't have you know, reasons for not understanding each other. It's very bizarre. I mean, we know so many you know, sets of musical siblings, and we have to say that we're very lucky. That's probably because of our age gap. I'm 9 years older, and we kind of grew up separately. We never had to compete, you know, for the same attention. And it was only, I guess, later in life, when he was about 15, 16 years old, that we reconnected and became great friends and colleagues. And you know, nowadays when we come back from long tours, we inevitably end up, you know, having dinner together the following night, and on it goes. You know, we're sort of we really spend a lot of time together and enjoy every minute of it.
You make a kind of music, Slava, you and Leonard together as the Gregorian brothers. It's almost it's actually been one of those types of music that's sort of been hard to categorise, and you've sort of confounded critics too in lots of ways. There's a great response to the music and people love it, but it can either be described as world music or classical music, or and often sort of turns up on lists of the top 10 jazz albums. Where do you see your music sitting in that sort of lexicon? Are you sort of quite happy to sort of continue to just make beautiful music that confounds people but delights them at the same time?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it is, you know, the point about all this is that it's, you know, it's very hard to categorize music in general. You know, we've got a complicated musical background in that we studied classically, and we love classical repertoire, both, you know, existing repertoire and new music written by current composers, and at the same time we grew up being encouraged to improvise and play jazz and popular music, and we genuinely, you know, love that kind of good music too, and we write ourselves as well. So I think for us to be happy and fulfilled, we love combining all of these aspects. So I mean, in the last sort of 10 years, what we tend to do is focus on loose themes from one recording to another, and classical project to, we like following that up with a with an album of contemporary music, of, you know, music that we've written or colleagues have composed for us, and then go back to some more classical repertoire. And it, I guess keep on mixing up our programs in that kind of a way when we're playing live.
The show that's coming to the Frankston Arts Centre, which we'll see you here on the peninsula, or the, sort of the tip of the peninsula, on the 26th of March at the Frankston Arts Centre. It's a beautiful performing arts centre there. What can appreciators of your music expect in that show, Slava?
Well, we're actually on the cusp of a new album. We're recording next week, so by the time we're playing in Frankston in 2 weeks' time, we're well and truly going to be playing a whole lot of new music, and it's a we're going back to classical repertoire for this. And this project is called Songs Without Words, and you know, we love great melodies and wonderful harmony, and the song form is something that has always really excited us, probably because we don't sing and we try to sing on our guitars. So we thought, I mean, we've always loved having lyrical pieces within our sets, but we've never focused on an entire album of that. But this album is literally arrangements of existing songs you know, composers historically often wrote instrumental pieces with a song in mind, and they, you know, they call these pieces Songs Without Words, for example. And so they're works by composers like Elgar, Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff, composers that you don't associate with the guitar at all. But for us, it's been a great opportunity to dive into a new world.
Beautiful. Well, I guess when you have the capacity and the ability to make your instrument sing the way you do, Slava, along with your brother Leonard Gregorian, there is no need for vocal. You're actually one of the reasons when people go along and think, gee whiz, if I'm a singer, I would not be required. We're thrilled that you're going to be performing locally for us, the Frankston Arts Centre, Sunday the 26th of March, 7:30. We've got a double pass as well to give away to RPP listeners if they'd like to give us a call. 597-51234 is the number. Slava Gregorian, always great to catch up. We're going to have a listen underneath us now at the moment. We're having a listen to This Time, which I think was the title track of the sixth album release. Thank you so much for joining us on RPP FM, Slava Gregorian, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the Frankston Arts Centre in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you very much, and see you soon.
On RPPFM, Slava Gregorian, who along with Leonard Gregorian performing on the 26th of March at the Frankston Arts Centre. And we do have a double pass to give away, 5975-1234, as we listen to the beautiful music of the Gregorian brothers, This Time on RPPFM.